Happy Halloween!
Tonight's episode involves ghosts, demons, spirits,
bones,
and other paranormal things. Come check it out.
Of a dead guy.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to our Halloween special. My name is Kenton DeYoung, and I'm sitting here with my co-host, Dylan Fairman.
That's scary.
A little bit.
That's firing.
And this is Unsolved Canadian Mysteries.
Sorry, Kenton.
I love it.
My bad.
So, Dylan, how you been?
Good. I've been... I don't know. I'm trying to think of a Halloween word. I've been expecting you.
Ooh.
I have been inspecting you. Expecting you, not inspecting you.
It's okay.
That'd be creepy.
Yeah.
Been inspecting that body.
Okay.
Actually, that's even creepier. Ooh. Hi.
You've been good?
Yeah, I've been good.
Okay, good. So
beer today.
That's okay. It's all good. The last one we put out was the Lemon Mine.
Lemon Mine.
We actually, for those who are in the know, we're actually putting that episode out tomorrow.
Yes.
In the future.
Yes. So, but it's already been out for a while if you're just considering this to be today.
Yes. Yeah.
Happy Halloween.
So I guess the last one we put out that people are actually going to hear about this point,
yeah,
would be the one about we had the Met Trapper of Chesley and the Met Trapper of Red River.
Right. One being Patreon.
That's right. We were putting out the Met Trapper posts on social media just to kind of drum up attention to it.
Yeah.
And we got one comment asking if we were a parody podcast.
A parody podcast?
Parody. I don't know who we're parodying.
That's funny. We just did all like, maybe we just did all the stereotypical shit.
Yeah, right.
And he's just like, these guys can't be real. No one can be that stupid.
We are a real podcast.
We're real. No parody. Dude.
So that was the only feedback we got. But then I said like, no, we're real. And this is the podcast we're doing. And they seemed happy with that. So
cool.
And we began some good attention from the posts, which is great.
That is great.
Everything's growing. Our Twitter is growing because that shout out we got last time we talked. So
right.
Everything's going good.
Cool. Yeah. And then we also got on the Patreon, which has already been dropped, the mystery of the family that went missing. What was that called again?
Oh, the Jack Rabbit
family.
Yes. Is that one coming out? It didn't come out yet, has it?
No, we're still editing it.
Okay.
But by now, it's out.
Yes.
By now.
Hello.
Happy Halloween.
So you should check out the Patreon because we do put a lot of extra content out on there.
Yes.
Some behind the scenes, some pre-releases, stuff like that. It's only like $2 or $5 a month. Not that much money and helps us out go a long way.
And now that we've hired Christina, there'll be more.
Yes. We want to do the plan. Fingers crossed, 2 Patreon and 2 public ones a month.
Yeah.
Something like that.
That's what we're trying to aim for. We're working towards it. Yeah, yeah.
But this month we have this one, our Halloween special.
Ah! Wow. That's Kenton's scream. He laughs louder than he screams.
And then we have a Patreon Halloween special too.
Yeah, and the Halloween special for Patreon is not going to be this. It's going to be Kenton's got a few ghost Halloween stories, and actually our editor Christina will be joining us as well, and she's going to say a couple stories as well, and we're going to just do a little ghost story circle.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be splendid.
So when you hear this, think, oh, I love this episode. These guys are great. I want to hear them more of a casual banter.
Yeah.
Go check it out.
Yeah, you can either pay to come see some more or just listen again.
Yeah. Okay, so are you ready for tonight's Unsolved Kin Mystery Halloween special?
Yep.
Okay.
Spooky. But is it spooky?
Oh, yeah, man.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. Got everything in this one.
Did it take place on Halloween? Probably not.
No.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
How many are those? Probably none in Canada.
It's tricky to get one on that same day.
I'm sure there's some somewhere in Europe. I'm sure there's at least one in the States.
Oh yeah.
Gotta be one in the States. The States is just spooky.
Every day in the States is spooky.
Every day. Every Halloween in Florida there is an unsolved mystery.
Yes, probably. Yeah. Yeah. Way back in season 1 of Unsolved Canadian Mysteries, we did a story about the Witch of Quebec City.
Yeah, the one that was in the cage.
Yes.
Not the cage. What is it called, though? We talked specifically about what the thing containing her was called, and you explained what it was.
I did.
But it's okay, because whatever.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
It's okay.
I don't remember either.
It was a cage. It was pretty much a cage.
It was a cage. It was a witch cage.
Yeah. Well, this is kind of a similar story. This also takes place in Quebec City. It takes place a few years earlier, though.
Prequel.
This one, it's the exorcism of Barbie Halley.
Wow, that was a lot.
Yeah.
Barbie Halley.
Barbie Halley.
My sister's name's Halley.
Barbie Halley?
No.
No. Okay.
Barbie's Barbie.
It's actually like it's, I'm sure you can say it better in French, but it's like it's Barbie without the I. So I don't think it's like Barbie.
Barb.
Maybe it's Barb, but.
Barbie.
We're going to go Barbie.
Barbie. That is not one of my wheelhouse impersonations. The French, especially not the Canadian French.
Yeah, the Quebecois.
Excuse me?
The Quebecois, like Quebec, but it's Quebec, Quebecois. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So before we get too far into the mystery, I probably won't get any heat for this, but technically, because of when it takes place in 1659, Canada does not exist yet. This is in New France, which is, you know, I keep kind of like pushing that line, you know?
Whatever. It will be here eventually. Canada will be here. Yes.
Yeah, have to That's go through fine. A couple things first. But
it's
yeah.
a very new country, people.
It's tough to find things in the 150 years when we have 400 years of history. Mm-hmm. Like, is 1867 like the cutoff, or can I go like, you know, so.
Cool.
So this one is from 1659.
Fine.
So a ways back.
A ways.
So 1659, Quebec City. Barbie Halley immigrates here from France to New France.
Nice. Come on, Barbie. Let's go party.
Do.
Do you know that song?
I do it. No, I know it.
I do. I do.
I know that one.
Okay.
So Quebec City at this time, and New France as a whole, is very small. I think the territory is about the same. Extends from the St. Lawrence River down into Quebec, into Ontario, and then I think a bit into the States.
Okay.
But at the time, of course, it's sparsely populated. Only around 1,700 people, so less than 2,000 people. And about half of them live in Quebec City. Mm. It's a beginning of a community, the beginning of Canada, right? And they have a lot of things kind of going against them. One of them are the Iroquois, are not a big fans of the French.
Really?
The Hurons, they work fine with the French, but the Iroquois don't. The French was kind of like working with them, trying like find common ground. The idea was that these people, the indigenous people, they met Jesus, they knew the Bible, but over the centuries, their stories had just kind of changed.
Right.
So they wanted to reintroduce them to how it was properly written and the proper stories. But as time goes by, they realize, oh, these are not the same stories. They're completely different. And this is, these are not Christians who forgot their way. They're a whole different group of people.
Mm.
So it went from being like, let's re-educate them on the stories that they've gotten wrong to let's just convert them. It went from a religious kind of approach to a political one. They want more Catholics because while New France is based off French, France, and it's Catholic, there's a bigger concern, and that is the Protestants. Because in the South, the United States, or that's based on England, right? And of course, English and France are always fighting back then. So the big concern to them was Protestants. So if we can convert these indigenous people into Catholics, we have a bigger base here.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure that's going to win over great.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why the Iroquois didn't like them.
Listen here, people. We're going to teach you something amazing. Yeah. No.
Yeah, we're not interested.
Go away.
So a lot of clashing there, and that comes up a little bit later on the story. But another issue that the people of Quebec City and New France have is that for 6 months of the year, their only access to the outside world of the St. Lawrence River is frozen solid. So they can't get food in or out. They can't get wood, like stuff from France, from Europe, they can't bring over.
Right.
So whatever they have, they got to work with for 6 months of the year.
It's a long time in winter hours.
Yes. Yeah, a long, cold winter with little food, little materials, right? So it's a beginning of a community. It's a struggling community, but it's the beginning, right? And as we know through history, it obviously succeeded because it's still there today.
Right.
So it all worked out, but it was tough. So Barbie Halley immigrates from France to New France into this new world. So her age, so I always say so way too much, I've noticed.
Kenton, you do.
I do.
If you would like to know a few words you say too much, it's so,
yes.
That's it.
Yes, I'm bad with those.
There might be a couple other ones.
I used to cut, and I stopped. I gave up on it. It was too much work.
Well, I have software that actually cuts out lots of your ums. Oh, it's pretty funny. It didn't work this time, so Christina's hand doing it.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway.
Okay.
If I hear another one, I'll let you know.
Okay.
So,
Barbara Halley, God, I just said instead. Within 1 year of arriving in Quebec City, Barbie Halley works at Beauport. Beauport is this kind of like a house family, just about 6 kilometers outside of Quebec City. And she's brought in as like a servant, so she can learn how to cook and clean, do gardening and do laundry, kind of the lessons that a woman of that age needs to know when they eventually will get married and get their own house.
Right.
So it's like the, you know, education firsthand kind of thing. But she's getting paid for it.
Dope.
So Halley, I said so. And I was going to say, don't say so.
Say it ain't so.
A few months into Hallie's employment at Beauport, there's a knock on the door. And I'm not sure if she opens it or someone else opens the door, but it's a man named Daniel View.
Daniel View.
Viewl.
Viewl.
Yeah. V-U-I-L.
Daniel Viewl.
Viewl says to the owner that he is there for Barbie Halley. His explanation is that prior to the Halley family coming over to New France, he had arranged land for them to live on. And in exchange for the land, he was promised her hand in marriage.
Like, they're going to cut off her hand and give it to
him? No, all of her. Her entire being for marriage.
Oh, I see. Okay. Okay. No, I get it. No.
Okay.
I thought that was the mystery.
No, I'm sorry.
Okay. No, okay. I'm waiting.
Okay. Now, Viewl, he owns a grain mill, and he's notoriously bad-tempered. He is notoriously corrupt. He's a bit of a hermit, lives in his mill by himself. And worst of all, according to them, he's a Protestant.
Sorry, I didn't know this was going to take this long.
It's okay. It's all good.
I'm kidding.
It's okay. Barbie, she is 13, 14, 15 years old at this point, right? And a little too young to get married by our standards. But by the standards of 1649, she could get married at that age. In fact, the age of consent then was 12.
Hmm. Independent women back then.
Yeah. Not for very long because they got married and became property. But yeah, they had... Yeah.
Sorry, I was sarcasm.
It's okay. It's okay. It's okay. At the age of 12, she has the right to decline marriage proposals.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, right?
At least she's got that going for her.
So she says no. I don't want to marry you.
Yeah.
Maybe he doesn't know his history, who he is, but she's like, I got a job. I just moved here a year ago. Like, I'm not marrying some random guy.
You've got bad BO. Look at your teeth. Sorry.
So she says no, and they close the door. And he is pissed, right? He's mad.
Yeah.
The word they used was irritate, but it's not irritated like in English. It means like he is mad down to his very core, and he wants to cause harm.
Oh.
Okay.
Nice.
So what he does next is a little debated. He goes back to the mill, of course, and there's some discussion, some debate, if he does it by himself or if he talks to some of the witches or magicians, they call them, that he often associates with. And the plan is that they're going to bring forth an entity from hell to terrorize Barbara Halley so much so that she will eventually give in and marry him.
Men were so desperate.
Really? Like, yeah, there's easier ways.
Yeah.
You know? Flowers, like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, flowers.
Chocolates, you know?
courtship, any sort of courtship, really.
You know, just take her for a walk or something.
Like, you know, be friends for a little bit.
Yeah. Get to know her.
Listen to her.
That woman said no to me, so we're going to summon the depths of hell to come after her.
Well, hell's a good place to look for it.
Meanwhile, back at Beauport, things start going a little bit weird for Barbara Halley. She starts hearing flutes and drums throughout the night.
The weapons of hell.
Disembodied sounds, yeah. Some of the rocks chip off of the bricks of Beauport and fly across the room. Not at her, but just... Whoosh,
yeah.
Right? She starts seeing dark, shadowy figures in doorways or windows, you know. Sometimes they're children. Sometimes they're men, they're animals. Sometimes they look demonic. She even says sometimes it's Daniel, Viewl, or these witches that he apparently conspired with.
What kind of animals?
Dogs.
No bears?
No, I'm sorry.
Okay, no.
I don't even know if there's any bears in that part of the country.
Well, we'll see.
Okay. We'll see how things go. Maybe we can fit one in somehow. Yeah. There's some witnesses to these events occurring with Barbara Halley. And one of them was a witness that said when this kind of made more attention was when Barbara Halley walked past a pregnant woman. And they said they could hear the baby inside the womb crying.
Okay.
Which is weird. And I don't think that's possible.
Yeah, that might be difficult when the baby doesn't have any air in its lungs. Maybe it's a demon baby.
Well, these are similar claims to the witch of Quebec City who used to walk past cows and the cow's milk would sour or the chicken's eggs would go bad or stuff like that. So the same kind of idea of being in the presence of some kind of foul entity causes nature to corrupt.
Do you think Christina put like a sound effect of like a baby like going like this?
I like it.
But do you think she also put just now sound effects of chickens and cows?
Oh yeah, I like it. Just make it hard for her.
Yeah. Oh no, a train!
Some of the witnesses at Beauport would then say that Barbara Halley was afflicted with some kind of malfeasance.
Oh, whoa. What?
Malfeasance.
Okay, so I did hear you correctly. Now, what?
It's like, I'm trying to think of the exact definition of malfeasance. It's like an evil entity.
Okay.
Like I want to say it's like an aura of evil. I think like Malfoy from Harry Potter.
Yeah.
The same root word there. Malfoy is bad. Malfeasance is bad.
Okay.
Easance, I think it's more like an entity, like a essence.
Okay.
So it's an evil essence.
Okay.
I may have got that wrong, but I think that's...
I'm with you.
Okay. Another source says that she was vexed with demons. A couple different witnesses saying these things about this woman. These actions and the testimony of these witnesses get the attention of Bishop Francois de Laval. Now, if you've heard the name Laval, Laval University in Quebec?
Nope.
Okay, it's a big university in Quebec named after Bishop Laval. Hmm. So this is who we're talking about.
All right.
So very big Canadian name, early Canadian history name. And Laval hears about this and he says, oh, this sounds like a demonic possession or obsession or something like that, because there's different levels to it. I'm going to send some priests out to go and deal with this. So he sends a couple priests that deal with Barbara Halley's problem, and they cannot exorcise the demon.
They were probably really out of shape.
Yeah. I actually had in my notes exercise with an E. I'm like, that's not right. I'm going to look up that spelling, exorcise.
Kenton, I'm dyslexic.
Okay.
Doesn't make any sense to me what you're saying.
Okay.
It's all the same to me.
Oh, I'm sorry. They were unable to exorcise the demon, so then Bishop Laval goes and tries it himself.
Ooh.
He's also unable to do it.
Interesting.
But talking to the witnesses and talking to Halley, he gets an idea that the person responsible for this is Daniel Veal.
Right.
So what he does next is more of a modern approach. He goes to the criminal justice system to find some way to punish Daniel Veal for this.
Yeah, okay. I'm sure there was probably something. I remember you talking about that there was something you are not allowed to pretend to be a witch, but you can practice witchcraft if you are a witch.
Yes.
Something like that. So I'm sure if that is legit, then there's got to be something else.
Yes. He begins to collect evidence against Buell, and one of them things are, about the witchcraft, right? Either he did it or he claims he did it, and anyway, what he claims to have done is affecting this woman, and she's having trouble day-to-day life because of this.
Right. Sue him.
With enough evidence together, Bishop Laval then goes and gets Buell arrested for witchcraft.
Okay.
He has him arrested in September of 1660. I think earlier I said this was in 49. It's in 59.
Okay.
I'm sorry about that. I make a little correction.
Wow.
I know.
I'm confused now.
I'm sorry. It was in 59 instead of 49. So 60, 1 year later, he's arrests him. He was imprisoned in February of 61, and he was put on trial in October of 61.
Okay.
He was found guilty, and he was ultimately executed for his crimes.
Executed for witchcraft?
Well, that's the question, because there were other people at that time who participated in witchcraft.
Mm.
And they were not executed.
Right.
They were, in this case, banished from the community.
Mm.
When he was executed, he was with some other people, and their charge was selling liquor to the Iroquois.
Oh, I see.
But there were other people who had sold liquor to the Iroquois in the past, and their punishment was excommunication from the church.
Wait a minute. So let me just compare this, okay?
Yeah.
So he hired a witch, basically,
yeah,
to put a curse, whatever.
Yeah.
And He was executed for it. Let me get this straight. So he hired somebody to... to get someone to put a curse, hex, whatever you want on her, and he was executed. So does that mean if I hire someone to kill someone, I'll go to jail, but if I myself am a contracted hitman, I'll be fine?
The laws have changed a bit since then.
You know, it's not as funny as I thought it was going to
be. No, it's fair. Because he's not necessarily responsible for the crime, right? He just contracted out someone.
Yeah.
Or was in agreement with, like, he might not have actually done the dirty work himself.
Right. Well, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, he was punished in a way that doesn't fit the crime. And it doesn't make sense why he would be executed when previous people who committed witchcraft were either excommunicated or banned from the community.
Right.
Right? And also it states in the article where he talks about his execution. It says, and it was translated, and it's been debated, like, I was reading a book about this, 4 pages about this one, like, piece of text. He was hanged, comma, or rather shot.
Or rather shot.
So
what, they tied a noose around his neck and then they didn't feel like hanging him up, so they just shot him?
Right? What went wrong? That needs to be explained, right? Why was this man punished in a way that doesn't fit the crime? And what happened with the execution?
Botched.
Yeah, something went wrong. Yeah, and it didn't state what happened. With him out of the picture, the idea was this malfeasance should dissipate. It should go away. It doesn't.
Wow. Who would have thought?
Well, I think it's because they didn't get the right person. Because they should have gone after the witches or magicians, and not after Daniel Veal. But I think they went after Daniel Veal because he was a Protestant. And that was a bigger threat to them than witchcraft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Boom.
In December of 1660, 2 months before Veal was executed, Bishop Laval had Barbie Halley moved from Beauport to Quebec City's Hotel du Hospital. Now, this hospital was operated by the Jesuits. So we do know from our previous podcast about cannibalism and about the Wendigo.
Yeah.
The Jesuits kept a lot of books, a lot of writings about what they did and who they saw and what happened to them. So just when some of them were overcome with Wendigoism and they attacked each other.
Right.
So the Jesuits kept records of Barbie Halley's time with them. And they didn't say in the record that she was demonically possessed. They said she was afflicted by a nuisance. Now, this kind of translates to, it's not like an evil spirit, it's an annoying spirit, like an elf or a goblin.
Or that one from the house.
Yes.
That was being a dick.
Yes,
exactly. In a Patreon episode.
Exactly the same as the, I can't remember the name of that family.
Demon House, Demon of House Hill.
Yeah.
No, it's not that.
No, it was exactly the same.
This one. Thanks, Christina.
Yeah, exactly the same idea. It was some kind of prank spirit.
Right. A naughty spirit.
That's what the majority of the Jesuits believed, that it was some kind of nuisance spirit. Like a green magic kind of thing, as opposed to a black magic kind of thing. So a green magic is more natural, black magic is more evil. Right? Some people say there's 4 magics: white, green, black, and red. White is the good stuff, black is the bad stuff, green is the, like, stuff from the earth, and red is blood magic.
Blood.
That's the idea.
Wouldn't that be bad too, though?
It's like a different kind of bad. Just like green is like a different kind of good.
I see.
Yeah. So it's like, I think it levels is white is the normal good stuff, green is earth, black is bad, and red is like the...
really bad.
Yeah, the really bad stuff, yeah. Like necromancy kind of thing, yeah. To my understanding of something I don't understand at all. Yeah.
Thank you, Ken.
Yeah.
For your expertise.
Yeah. So the Jesuits believed it to be some kind of nuisance, but one of the nuns there, Marie Catherine of St. Augustine, believed it to be something more. Now, what's interesting about Marie Catherine of St. Augustine is that she herself believed to be at war with an evil entity her entire life. She would often pray and get bruises on her body from this entity attacking her as she was praying. So when Barbie Halley came in with the same problem, she kind of took it upon herself to save her because she knows what this is like, to be afflicted by an entity. And every night she'd sit beside Barbie Halley and she'd pray for her, and the entity would, instead of attacking Barbie Halley, would attack her. And they said that some days she'd come out of the room and her arms would be bruised from the spirit attacking her.
Okay.
During the daytime, Barbie Halley would work in the hospital helping patients. but at night she'd be treated as well. Whose entity only seemed to come out at night.
And sorry, what's her profession?
She's a nun.
Okay.
In a hospital. I don't think it's the same level of medical care we have now with nurses and doctors. Reading it, it's more like a mental hospital kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't want to say like an asylum, right? But it's probably more along that than like a, we'll treat you with your illness. More of a, we'll just take care of you.
Yeah, stay here. Don't go outside.
According to St. Augustine, at one point, even this entity appeared before her, pretending to be an angel to kind of question her faith. Yes.
This is the same guy.
When I was reading this, I was thinking, yeah, this is exactly the same. Just being a nuisance spirit,
yeah.
Then presenting itself as an angel and confusing the heck out of everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was thinking, this is exactly the same thing.
Probably the same guy.
The spirit, because I'm thinking Quebec City is not that far away from this. I think it actually happened in Quebec.
That's where I think it happened.
Yeah, it's the same spirit hanging out a couple hundred years later, it pops up again, causes some issues. It is the parallels, yeah. Same with like the flying stones.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, right, with the house that...
There was the demon.
Oh, yeah, that happened, that one too, yes.
Yeah, there's been a few instances.
There's a few with the flying stones.
Yeah.
But that one was in the same area too.
Yeah, that was like on the Ontario side of the border, yeah. Which is all was in New France.
Mm.
Demons don't respect provincial barriers, man.
Mm-mm. Or they don't like French people.
So sometime between the autumn of 60, shit, fuck Kenton, 61 and 62. So sometime between the autumn of 1661 and 1662, Barbie Halley leaves the hospital and comes back to Beauport. The idea here was that St. Augustine was able to cure the spirit, make it go away and leave her alone. Some texts say, yeah, that's what happened, but of course there's more to the story, so we're going to say, no, that's not what happened. The spirit then hung around and came back to bother Barbie Halley some more.
Mm.
So she returned back to Beauport, and again, these afflictions started again. And this time, Mother House Marie Regnerod, I'm going to say that name wrong. I don't speak French, I'm sorry. So I'm like, that's not how you say it. I know it's not how to say it.
We'll say RJ.
RJ. Marie RJ. Okay. She would sit next to Barbie Halley every night with a collection of religious relics and pray away this entity.
I'm sure it worked.
Well, it didn't have a lot of effect.
Boy, I was wrong.
On October 15th of 1662, this spirit attacked her very much so in the bed. And Marie tried what she could to make this entity go away, but it would not listen to her this day. So she pulled out like her last resort. It was a rib bone of Jean de Rebus.
Oh.
Now, Jean de Rebus at this time was a martyr. Now he's recognized as a saint, but he was a martyr because in 1649, which is where I think I got my dates mixed up at the beginning.
Probably.
Thinking about Jean de Rebus. He was with other Catholic priests, with some Hurons, when they were attacked by the Iroquois. Him and the other priests were then captured and underwent, so they say, ritualistic torture. And as they were torturing the other priests, Jean de Rebus would, stand firm, give them strength. Even though he was undergoing the same thing, he'd make sure everyone's okay, comforting them, even though they were torturing him as well. I'm not sure exactly what they did to him, but he wouldn't cry, he wouldn't scream, he was very brave. And because of this, the Iroquois were very impressed in his faith and in his stoicism. So they started to cut off pieces of him and ate it in front of him. And that didn't do anything. They started to drain his blood and would drink his blood, thinking, we talked about this, about absorbing that entity into themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, becoming what you eat, right? And after they were done eating his flesh and drinking his blood, they poured boiling water over his head, which killed him. It was supposed to be like a mock baptism kind of thing, but ultimately killed him.
Yeah, that'll do that.
Yep, torture and boiling to death. It does it.
Quick, quick and painless way.
Yeah. A little while later, they come out and they find the bodies and they bring them back to Quebec City. And the stories of what he did travel, right? Rebus was so brave, he did this, he did that. And what they end up doing is they take his body, and because he's a member of the church, they boil down his body.
They burned him even more with water.
In a lie.
Well, they don't have to tell the truth. They could do whatever they want. It's back then.
They boiled him in lie to melt away the skin so they just have the bones left. And then these bones became the relics. And they're sent back home to France and throughout New France, and they're these very religious relics of Rebus.
Cool.
So there was a skull of Jean de Rebus in the hospital, and there was a rib at Beauport.
Cool.
So this is the rib that Marie used that night.
Dope. I wonder if people are allowed to keep them, like, as, like, collection stuff, if that counts. Does it count as a religious relic, or does it count as human remains?
Probably some kind of paperwork you have to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some holy paperwork.
Yeah, what is the deviation between the divine and the non-divine?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's a bone. Oh, it's a relic.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Marie takes this bone. She places it next to Barbie Hally. And immediately, the body contorts away from it. And out of Barbie Hally's mouth comes a voice demanding to take that rib away from her. It's burning us, it said.
And whoa.
And Marie said, whose rib is this? And it says, it's the martyr of the Hurons, because he was with the Hurons when he got captured. And she says, I want you to say the martyr's name. And Barbie Hally screams something incomprehensible. Not the name of Brer Boo, but something incomprehensible.
Something in the language of the demons.
Yes.
It's no more fun and games for that demon.
Marie then commands the spirit entity to leave the body, and the body and the demon says, no, the girl belonged to them now. So Marie says, I'll get this exact quote, you have lied, damn spirit that you are. You have nothing. She is mine. Our good God, her mother and father gave her to me. Marie then takes the bone, the rib, and puts it on Barbie's heart.
Be cool if she like just like stabbed her through the heart with it. Well, the movie.
Pretty much. The demon then began to scream and said, remove it. It hurts so much. It hurts so much. Ignoring the pleas of the demon, Marie then calls upon the relics and asks the demon once more to remove itself from the girl's body. And the demon screams and Marie claims. Then she sees like a mist come out of her mouth, out of Barbie Hally's mouth.
Dude.
Like, not like a black mist like you see in movies,
just
but
like a faint.
Like a faint out.
Yeah.
And then this is the only quote that Barbie Hally has in the whole story.
Yeah, she hasn't said much.
Just a single
thing. She's not a talker.
All she said was, I don't want to marry you, and that's about it.
Right.
It was the only thing she says is,
I'm hungry.
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. It's over. But as tensions calm down, Marie looks up and at the foot of the bed sends two witches who materialized there.
And they both saw it, her and the nun.
Oh, you're wondering if Barbie and Marie saw.
Yeah.
Them. Yeah, they both saw them.
Okay.
Yeah, they both saw them.
This is spooky.
The witches then speak to the two of them. But out of their mouth, all they can hear is the sound of buzzing insects. It's not a human voice. It's just bzzz. And Marie doesn't understand what this is, so Barbie Hally does and translates and said that they've come to take her, Barbie Hally, to the Black Sabbath, which is what we talked about with the other witch of Quebec City trying to get across the water to do the Black Sabbath.
I've seen Black Sabbath live. They're great. I understand.
Really wants to go to that concert.
Yeah.
And Marie gets up with the rib and banishes them and they disappear.
Gnarly.
Yeah.
The power.
So it's over. Over. But of course, in any story, there has to be one more hook, right?
Yeah.
So, a couple years later, Barbara Hally is outside doing her own thing, and a wagon comes past, and a man comes over to her and tries to kidnap her and says he's from the same group that Daniel Veal was from.
Oh.
And he's after her. And I don't know if he looked the same or what, or if it was a prank or what it was. She screams, gets away from him, and then for the next almost 2 weeks, she's afflicted by some of the same things. The visions, the rocks, the sounds. Once again, Marie takes the relic. This time, there's no exorcism. She just prays it all away. So was this someone playing a hard prank? And was it just like PTSD all over again? Right? Could have been, right? Was it someone from the group? Because obviously, it didn't get everybody, right?
Mm.
Maybe it was. Who knows, right? So Barbara Hally recovers. She ends up getting a job at the hospital where she was a patient way back when. She does that, and I think it was in 1660. In 1666, a man named John Carrier gets a job there too. The two of them meet. They fall in love. They get married in 1670. They have some kids. They become active members of the church. They get a farm where they grow oats, and they have cows. And she would die at the age of 50.
Long life.
Back then, he would live a little bit longer, and he would die as well.
Hmm.
Their graves, they do have headstones, so you can find them on findagrave.com if you want to look up these people, as well as Daniel Veal. His grave is on there too.
Cool.
And these people we've mentioned, St. Augustine, Bishop Laval, and Marie, they're all well-known historical figures.
Cool.
So It's like some stories we've had where it's Joel Blow sees something scary, right?
You don't know them, yeah.
These are people who are worthwhile to believe. There's graves to back up the claims.
Celebrities.
Yeah, they're celebrities in religious celebrities, yeah. And there's witnesses, too, who sign papers and say, yeah, this is what happened. This is what happened. So this is one of like, the best documented stories of an exorcism.
Cool.
Now, story we've told you, in this story, Marie is the one who banishes the demon, right? She does not get credit for that. Instead, the hero of the story is Brebeau. It was his bones. They were so holy.
Wow.
Yeah, right? Of course.
So sexist that totally. You give it to the dead guy.
Totally. And the reasoning was Marie was not a professional. She was just like worked at home as a mother when like her sister was a nun and her husband was a doctor and like St. Augustine was a nun and there was a two priests before and Bishop Laval. Like they couldn't have done it. So there's no way this woman did it, this mother. Yeah. It was the holy bones of Brebeau. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I could have done that.
Yeah.
If like she just skipped all the steps.
Yeah. If anyone could use those bones.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
You could have given the bones to a dog and the devil would have left.
Yeah. Right. So Brebeau is technically the hero of the story, but everyone knows it's actually Marie.
Lame.
Yeah. So we'll talk about some of the mysteries because this was a scary story. What is the mystery here, right? Do you think Daniel Veal was responsible?
Do I?
Yeah.
No. Well, okay. Yes, but not in the way that you said.
Okay.
Like, I would say she was traumatized by this man in ways that are probably not documented because she probably didn't talk about it.
Yeah.
He probably forced himself on her.
Yeah.
And because what's the first step of a crazy man? Is it to go and talk to witches or is it to force yourself on a woman?
Yes.
Because she'll accept.
Yeah.
Right? So probably PTSD. She is like mentally unstable from being mistreated.
Yes.
Probably. And I would say she's just like hallucinating these things. And either this woman realized, like, what I would say is that the priests are trying to fix this, right?
Yeah.
They're doing what they can. But I think maybe this woman realized that this has nothing to do with this, and she just needs to play a part to try and convince this woman that it's over.
Yeah.
So she's like, I'm going to get this holy bone.
Yeah.
And maybe just enough of that, because again, it happened again to her.
Yeah.
When she encountered another stressful situation.
Yes.
And it came all back.
Yes.
So I would say it's like her subconscious doing these things because I can make anything happen if I'm scared enough.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Easy.
Yes.
And maybe she punched herself in the arms to get the bruises.
Yeah.
To make her, like, maybe that's what she did. It's like, I'm going to trick this woman into thinking that I'm here for her.
Yeah.
And maybe it's that. I don't know. That'd be my guess.
Oh, you're probably very close. That's what I think, too.
Yeah.
I was talking to someone the other day, and they said that they had to watch It by themselves.
Yeah.
And that whole night, they could have swore Pennywise is in the corner looking at them.
OG or new?
Like the two movies, right?
Yeah, the two new ones.
Yeah, the first one he watched, yeah.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, if you are upset enough, tired, stressed, you can see things. You can kind of conjure these own thoughts in your mind. So you're seeing shadow figures, you know, it could be anything. It could be the way the moon is shining, it could be the tree, it could be, but it looks like a person, right?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, yeah, let's say Daniel Veal obviously is a bad guy, right? He's rude. Greedy individual tries to get married to this woman. She says no. To just immediately switch to, okay, we're going to conjure the depths of hell to get her. That's kind of a jump, man. Like, try again.
Yeah.
Maybe cozy up to her. Try and make this work, right? Like, it seems too drastic.
Right.
And I think some of the paranoia might have set in at the time, too. Mm-hmm. They're worried about the unknown, like the indigenous people. They're worried about how they're going to survive.
Yeah.
They're worried about the Protestants.
Winter.
Winter. And this time period where this whole thing happens is only 30 years away from Salem witch trials.
Yeah.
There was already a concern about witches. So, you know, maybe she had these visions. Someone said maybe there's like a witch involved, or maybe someone said, you know, he used to dabble with this stuff. Does this go out and claim he summoned a demon from hell without, like, you know, the demon never seems to speak? As long as the other demons that make fun of people or terrorize them, This one just kind of focuses on her until St. Augustine gets involved, and then it goes after her.
See, that's so funny. Okay, for real though, the only one that I've like 100% couldn't really explain was the that demon of the house.
Yeah.
Because of how many witnesses and stuff heard it themselves.
Yes.
Sorry, go on though.
Well, it's the same. Yeah, same thing. You know, some kind of unexplained thing that maybe has a rational explanation. We just can figure it out.
Right.
And so in this case, I think she does have PTSD from Daniel Veal. Maybe she's putting it out as these visions, as these afflictions she's having, right? And then when she goes to the hospital, they might kind of understand what's going on with her. Say, this isn't a demonic thing. It's a natural thing. It's that green magic kind of thing. But then St. Augustine, who's so religious, she takes it as like a religious battle over the soul.
Yeah.
But then once she comes back to Beauport, I think Marie realizes, oh, this isn't like a battle of her soul in like a spiritual sense. It's maybe her own self trying to comprehend what happened with Danielville.
Yeah.
And maybe she feels some guilt too because of like the way she's felt that because Danielville was executed because of it. Because I could see him being executed for rape, sexual assault, that kind of thing. Not for demons or for selling liquor, but maybe they didn't want to put that kind of thing in. So I could see him maybe doing something more that would more physically harm her and him being killed for that and her having this process this trauma a different way.
Yeah. Plus, even if like, I could see the liquor one, especially if it's like, was drinking legal then?
Selling? Well, it was selling the liquor to the Iroquois and the Huron.
Okay, so it was legal then?
It was illegal to sell it to them, yeah.
Okay. Well, I could see them just killing him for that, and then there's just like, someone wrote one thing, and the person just approved it without even reading it, and it's like, oh, he died from witchcraft.
Yeah, there's some debate. You know, when he was arrested, he was then held for 8 months and then he was charged. Mm. Maybe he was arrested, released, and then arrested again for a different charge.
Right.
Maybe the witchcraft charge went nowhere. Maybe he was later convicted for sexual assault or for something of that sort.
I'm sure they weren't audited often.
No. With only 800 people around, I'm sure there was some eyes that weren't dotted. Yeah. I know this story was a little bit of a different kind of mystery,
yeah.
But it was spooky.
It was spooky. You kept your promise.
Yeah, spooky. What did you think of it?
It was great. Loved it.
This is like the first kind of exorcism to ever happen in Canada.
That's amazing.
And like we had that exorcism just last year. I think it was in Saskatchewan.
Really?
Yeah, that's a kids camp.
Oh.
Did you not hear?
Kenton, no.
Okay.
If you didn't tell me, I didn't hear about it.
It was, I don't know the details. We haven't covered it on the podcast. We might have to. There was a kid at a summer camp.
Yeah.
Something was going on and they brought in a priest to do an exorcism on him.
Crazy.
This was like in 22 or 2023. Like it was recent. And they got some heat for it too, for like bringing in a priest and exorcising a child and everything.
Yeah.
So I don't know the details. Maybe we'll cover it again because maybe there's something there. I don't know. So, I mean, besides that one, I don't know of any recent exorcisms.
Right.
But this was the first one, and not really Canada, but the early days of Canada.
Reminds me of The Exorcism, the movie.
Yes.
Where they're like, we haven't done an exorcism in like, it was like 30 years or something like that. And it's like, we have to get approval, like all the approval they had to get and stuff like that.
It's interesting because the age of the girl from The Exorcist is about the same as Barbie Halley. And a lot of people think of the Salem witch trials, they're about the same age too.
Yeah.
It's that age, 13, 14, 15 of girls where they go through that time period where, you know, they're, I don't want to, what's the
mean.
Right word? Mean. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Manipulative. Mean.
They're witches.
It's that time period where they can be influenced and they can do mean things like that.
Yeah.
So it could be that, you know, she was assaulted and then wanted to get back at him, or she was messed up inside or going through something.
Yeah.
You see that time and time again with this age group. And at that time period, I do think it was trauma related.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is great.
Awesome.
I wasn't sure how you'd go with that trauma approach. We kind of were on the same page.
Yeah. Like almost the same page.
Yeah. So no bears. But I'm sorry. Next time we'll find a bear.
Kenton, you've said that the past. No, I'm kidding. You haven't said that yet, but
we'll get a bear into
it. I'll hold you to it.
Okay, I'll find a bear story.
I need a possible bear story here.
I will get you one. I'll get you one.
Because I've forced it a lot. Like, it just seemed like, honestly, in the early days of the podcast, it was easy. It was easy to say, could be a bear. It's not anymore.
Okay, I will get you a bear story.
Okay.
A potential bear story.
Well, I hope so.
Okay. Well, thank you everyone for listening to tonight's episode of Unsolved Canadian Mysteries, our Halloween special.
Ah!
If you enjoyed this one, please check out our Patreon, where we have a different kind of Halloween special there as well.
Yes.
And I know last year we did an on-location thing. We will plan to do that next year. This year just didn't quite work out with everything going on, but we want to do more on-location investigations, because those are really fun.
Yes, they are.
So thank you for tonight, Dylan.
Thank you, Kenton.
As always, my name is Kenton DeYoung, and I'm sitting here with my co-host, Dylan Fairman. And this is another episode of Unsolved Canadian Mysteries.